Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Morrison against YTB International. Mr. Monroy.
May it please the court. My name is Christian Monroy, and I represent the plaintiffs in this case. This is a lawsuit against YTB International Incorporated and its subsidiaries, in which citizens of different states allege that defendants violated the anti-pyramid provisions of the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, or the ICFA. Similar lawsuits have been filed by the Illinois and California Attorneys General. YTB targeted single mothers and retirees with their work-from-home business plans. And in 2007,
similar lawsuits have been filed. Do you mean lawsuits under Illinois law?
No, there was one file. Yes, as far as the Illinois Attorney General, the California Attorney General filed one under California law.
Don't you think that's a problem for you?
Not so far.
Why, on your view, why aren't they required to sue under Illinois law?
I believe that the... I believe that citizens of California have the right to elect to choose the laws of the state.
That's one thing that certainly isn't true. One state's law applies or another state's law applies, but you don't get your choice of whichever law is more favorable to you. That's not the way it works. Your view is that there's a choice of law provision requiring the application of Illinois law. Illinois law would apply anyway. And therefore, Illinois law applies. I don't see how somebody can say, oh, I prefer some other law.
Well, it isn't simply an issue of a preference of one law over another. But I don't believe that in this case that or in any circumstance that the law of one state can subsume the law of another state.
Why does the choice of law provision in the contracts matter at all? I mean, Avery itself makes clear that choice of law is a question that is separate and distinct from, you know, the reach of the Consumer Fraud Act. So,
I respectfully disagree on that. The choice of law provision in this case applies for two different reasons. One, for the first part, it applies for the purpose of the Avery analysis to determine whether or not the Illinois Consumer Law, the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, can be applied to claims made by citizens of other states.
No. Look, the fact that Illinois law governs the contract, or the contracts, I guess, here, says nothing about whether they have valid tort claims under the Illinois statute.
No, but in plaintiff's complaint, plaintiff pleaded that, and I quote, in this case, like any other case, under Illinois law, the choice of law provision only extends to the extent of the language of the provision. In this case, plaintiff pleaded, quote, the choice of law and form selection clauses in defendants' contracts with plaintiffs and their proposed class classes, provided that all litigation shall be conducted in Illinois under Illinois law.
The key issue is the locus of the allegedly fraudulent transactions at issue, mm-hmm. rather than the choice of law provisions in your contract.
As far as fraudulent transactions, I would distinguish this case from the other cases that were decided that were cited by defendant, which involved fraudulent transactions. This was a pyramid scheme case, which involves a business operation. The defendant's illegal activity wasn't any single fraudulent transaction.
Pyramid schemes illegal in every state?
Excuse me?
Are pyramid schemes illegal in every state?
I haven't performed a surgery, but it's my a survey.
Isn't that a big question here? Let's suppose the rule were not the rule against pyramid schemes, but the rule against gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an Illinois firm that makes gambling equipment,
okay.
Say slot machines. Actually, the world's biggest maker of slot machines, Bally, was in Illinois.
Okay.
Right? It would make the machines in Illinois where slot machines are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
It would ship them to Nevada where slot machines were legal.
Okay.
Now, could somebody then sue somebody who didn't like the slot machines in Nevada sue and say this violates Illinois law because this scheme to have slot machines was orchestrated in Illinois, it's all made in Illinois, the contracts specify Illinois law, and so on, and therefore Illinois law governs?
Well, I would say yes if there was a statute that made it illegal to have a business operation out of Illinois that operates.
You would say yes. I suppose that's consistent with your view, but that would be absurd.
No, but I believe that the hypothetical that you gave me.
It's not a hypothetical. It's a fact.
Okay.
It's true. Right? That's the way the world has worked for a very long time. Things are made in one state, and slot machines and roulette and so on were just examples. Things are made in one state. They're shipped to another state. They're illegal in the first state. They're legal in the second. And nobody thinks that the first state's law rules the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I can imagine an argument for Illinois law on the ground that it wouldn't make much difference if pyramid schemes are illegal everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But if pyramid schemes are illegal in Illinois and perfectly legal in Kansas or New York or Virginia or other states where these people participated in them,
mm-hmm.
it's difficult to see how Illinois would have a right to rule the world. Now, you say you haven't even looked at whether this scheme is lawful or unlawful in other states.
Not in every state. I've looked at the large majority of states, and I
think it's illegal in every country.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that there is also a provision under federal law which makes it illegal. But what I was trying to say with
respect, it's illegal under federal law. Why does one care about choice of law
under federal law?
Appealing is, I assume, the choice of law matters. And now you're saying, no, choice of law doesn't matter.
Well, no. I said it was illegal under federal law, but the only persons that can act under federal law, I believe, is the FTC. It's my understanding that a pyramid scheme.
No SEC rule against pyramid schemes.
I think
you see, it's considered an illegal
federal
business.
Trade Commission, you're thinking maybe of Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act?
Where it refers to.
All right. There's nothing in Section 5 which prohibits pyramid schemes. There may be some FTC decisions attacking particular pyramid schemes as unfair trade practices, but all Section 5 prohibits is unfair trade practices.
Yes, that's correct. And there are decisions that construe that to prohibit pyramid schemes.
Look,
but,
Mr. Montreat,
know,
let me just say this. You've really done your best to identify every conceivable tie that the alleged pyramid scheme had to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, these ties would exist in any case where the defendant is based in Illinois. And if you take a look, a close look at the case, and, as the defendants have pointed out, there's no allegation that any of the out-of-state plaintiffs ever visited Illinois, for instance, to sign a contract, received a communication in Illinois, suffered damage in Illinois. So,
Well, the Illinois Supreme Court specifically said this case is different than the other cases that are cited that were cited in defendant's brief.
But in what way is it different? It's a run-of-the-mill pyramid scheme, allegedly.
It is a pyramid scheme, and a pyramid scheme is an illegal plan or operation. All of the pleadings in paragraph 51 of the Second Amended Complaint concern defendant's plan and operation. Now, while every other case that I believe that has ever construed the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act with respect to application to out-of-state plaintiffs, they've concerned fraudulent transactions. So you have a case like Landau v. CAN Financial, in which the plaintiff alleged a series.
Landau actually says exactly what I just said to you, Mr. Montreat.
Yes,
exactly what I just said to you, that those ties would exist in absolutely any case where a defendant is based in Illinois. That's the holding.
But this is the difference. In Landau concerned a fraudulent transaction that occurred out of state. So What is relevant in that case is the location of where the transaction primarily occurred. So in that case, pleading the laundry list of facts that plaintiffs have pleaded in this case in paragraph 51, that would be irrelevant to making the determination of whether or not the ICFA is properly applied to claims made by out-of-state plaintiffs. This case does not concern a fraudulent transaction or any specific one given transaction that occurred at any time in any particular area. What this case concerns is defendants' business operations. Defendants operated an illegal pyramid scheme outside of Illinois, and that's why pleadings with respect to defendants' business operations, such as where it's located, where different parts of the scheme operated, that's why those are the relevant determinations that a court must make in determining whether the ICFA applies to out-of-state claims and in determining whether or not defendant's illegal operation primarily and substantially occurred in Illinois. And to get back to the slot machine example, I do not believe that if the making of slot machines is illegal in Illinois but not illegal in another state, there's no law against scheming or operations for making slot machines. But in this case, there is a law specifically that specifically prohibits operations in which individuals primarily make their money from the recruitment of others. This is the pyramid scheme. And in this case, all of the facts relating to that illegal operation transpired in Illinois. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, I am Jim Martin, and I represent YTB and the other defendants.
Mr. Martin, I think we need to discuss jurisdiction in this case. What happened in the district court, as I understand it, is the district court said, well, when this suit began, there were out-of-Illinois plaintiffs and in-Illinois plaintiffs. First, I'm going to dismiss the out-of-Illinois plaintiffs on the ground that state law, Illinois law, doesn't apply to them. Now I've got only Illinois plaintiffs left. Now I'm going to dismiss the suit for want of jurisdiction because we've got Illinois principally on the plaintiff's side and on the defendant's side. Now, it looks like what the district court is doing is assessing subject matter jurisdiction as things have developed in the case. What happened to the rule that subject matter jurisdiction is determined on the day the suit is filed, or here, the day the suit is removed?
Your Honor, I guess the first thing I'd point out is that issue hasn't been raised by...
That's a question of subject matter jurisdiction. It was actually your obligation to raise it in your brief. It was your opponent's obligation to raise it, too. But it's principally a question for you.
And it is the defendant's position, and I believe it was the court's position, that this is an issue that is not simply subject matter jurisdiction. The abstention is a decision that the court makes as the facts come out, because it's not necessarily mandatory.
This is an act. This is a statute. It's 28 U.S.C. 1332 that is all about subject matter jurisdiction. That's what it is. Both 1333, 1332, and 1441E... are jurisdictional statutes. Can't say a statute that's all about jurisdiction isn't really about jurisdiction. You may not know, and it's obvious from the party's briefs that you don't know, that we've applied this rule to problems under the Class Action Fairness Act in particular. We had a case last year in which the district court, after removal, decided that the suit couldn't be certified as a class action and therefore remanded it. And we said, no, you can't do that. The propriety of removal under the Class Action Fairness Act depends 100% on things on the day. And if the case is properly removed, it must be decided in federal court. Now, it's not clear to me why that principle doesn't govern here.
I will stand in front of you and say I have not thoroughly researched that issue, and I apologize.
There's no evidence that either side or the district judge researched it at all, let alone thoroughly. It's obviously taking you by total surprise. It's not that you did a little research but not thorough research. You obviously did none.
Suppose an out-of-state plaintiff came to Illinois to visit YTB's headquarters, signed the contract while he or she was here in the state. Do you think, Mr. Martin, that would be enough in conjunction with the other ties to Illinois that the plaintiffs have alleged to give that plaintiff standing to sue?
I apologize, Judge. I can't really hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. What I was saying is let's just imagine that an out-of-state plaintiff comes to Illinois to visit your headquarters and signs the contract while he or she is in the state. Do you think that would be enough, in conjunction with the other ties to Illinois that they've argued or alleged, to give that plaintiff standing to sue under the Illinois Act?
In that situation, I think that is one of the factors to be considered. I do not think that in and of itself would be enough to justify a primary and substantial finding as to the occurrences related to the fraudulent transaction. Where the representations were made, where the individual resides, where the damages occurred, are also other factors that have to be considered, and I would never say that
all
it's
right,
just
so
one.
So let's
one.
Be concrete. YTB sells a distributorship to a firm in Kansas, which sells a sub-distributorship to a consumer in Iowa. Which state's law applies?
For ICFA? I mean, I'm sorry.
I have no idea what you just said.
Okay.
I just want to know which state's law applies. You can give any one of those three states.
Well, to the contractual issues or to a claim of fraud?
I didn't specify which of these things. You can answer for both if you wish.
Okay. Could you give me the hypothetical? I apologize. Could you give me the hypothetical
again? Your client sells a distributorship to a firm in Kansas.
Yes.
Which sells a sub-distributorship to somebody in Iowa. Which state's law applies?
I would say
your firm, a distributor, and a sub-distributor.
I would say it depends upon who's suing whom.
If the plaintiff is the sub-distributor, claiming it's a pyramid scheme, that's the position,
okay.
Right? Which state's law applies? I don't see how you can possibly say it's not Illinois without telling us which of the other two possibilities it is.
Well,
there are only three.
I would say it is where the communications and transactions took place.
Communications occurred in all of these places.
Well, the plaintiff, I believe...
Transactions are just like the transactions here, and I've named the three states.
Okay, so the...
Communications start out from your client. Information from your client is passed by the person in Kansas to the person in Iowa. Right?
Okay.
It's just what's going on here, but I've just named the three states.
Okay, but the plaintiff is in Iowa, so that's one factor. The plaintiff's damages are occurring in Iowa, alleged damages. That would be number two. The communications made to this plaintiff occurred in Iowa.
No, they occurred all over the Internet. Right? Communications these days, if they don't go through the Postal Service, which is an aspect of interstate commerce, are being met electronically. Means they happened all over the world, including from Illinois and from Kansas and in Iowa. This shouldn't be a puzzle to you. You've got to have a theory about which state's law applies to your plaintiffs in this very litigation.
Yeah, and I would say, Judge, it's Iowa, because that's where the majority of circumstances surrounding the transaction took place.
And what is the law of Iowa about pyramid schemes?
That I do not know.
Why is it that neither side to this case knows what the law of other states is? This is a question about choice of law, conflict of law. You can't intelligently resolve a dispute about choice of law until you know what the other choices are. If it turns out that Iowa has a rule identical to that of Illinois, why are you fighting? It is, in the phrase of choice of law, a spurious conflict. One wouldn't worry about it. You can't figure out choice of law without knowing what the other options are. That's just step one. Right? If this is lawful, and if you think that Iowa law applies in my setup, and this is lawful in Illinois, in Iowa, then we have a serious question about whether it's sensible to use Illinois law to forbid an offer or a transaction that's perfectly lawful in Iowa. But if it's unlawful in Iowa, and if Iowa's got the same kind of rules as Illinois, then I don't understand what the fight is about. And apparently neither of the lawyers understands what the fight is about, because you don't know what the rule is in Iowa.
Well, what I know is that every law varies.
You're not actually saying that pyramid schemes are lawful anywhere in this country, are you?
No, Your Honor, but I'm not saying that YTB engaged in a pyramid scheme either.
Is that what you're trying to avoid with the answers to Judge Easterbrook?
No, but candidly, when you look at different anti-pyramid scheme laws, they vary significantly as to what is the definition of a pyramid scheme. And that's one of the difficulties in trying to make this a national class action under one state's statute. Is there?
Well, if you say it differs in the definition of a pyramid scheme, you're saying, I think, that there are some things that are illegal in Illinois and legal in Iowa. And which things might they be that are illegal in Illinois but legal in you name your state, some other state. Which things are they?
Well, Judge, actually, I believe the definition most often varies in application of, is the transaction strictly related to recruiting and payments are made for recruiting, or is there a exchange of a real product, and there different statutes define those in different ways. And in fact, there's a currently now back in the district court, plaintiff has filed a lawsuit alleging on all the same behalf of all the plaintiffs with each of their own state statutes, and the statutes vary depending upon which state they are and how they define a pyramid scheme and when an action is sufficient to be a pyramid scheme. In some states, recruiting, if tied even to a product sale, can still be a pyramid scheme. In other states' definition, if there is a product that is being sold, then it cannot be a pyramid scheme. And so application of a national class action when there are variations in the state laws does make a difference. If I can get back to
is
the jury.
Is any part of this in state court yet?
Well, the plaintiff filed in state court after these actions by the district court, and they were removed back to federal court when it was remanded.
Back to Judge Murphy again?
Yes.
So you're a ping-pong ball.
Well, Your Honor, I think as to John Stahl, who still has the exact same case in district court, the issues are moot. And I think jurisdictionally as to the issue of his case being dismissed, he actually agrees with the court that it was appropriate. He did not challenge
going to state court.
Going to state court below. In fact, the court asked him to brief the issues. So even if this court, I believe, even if this court believes that all parties involved should have considered other jurisdictional issues, the plaintiffs did not raise that issue. They didn't challenge the dismissal on this case. And, in fact, they concede that it's appropriate here.
If the plaintiffs didn't challenge the dismissal, they wouldn't have appealed. They did challenge the dismissal. They may not have raised the right argument, but this case was appealed. It is here, and we have to apply the correct rules of subject matter jurisdiction.
But, Your Honor, I think they waived the...
You can't.
You cannot
you
waive
can't.
Issues of subject matter
you
jurisdiction.
Can't.
You cannot.
That's the point.
Okay.
You have time.
Okay. First I want to make sure that if there are any other questions. Other than that, as to ICFA applying to the non-Illinois defendants, you will first note that this argument that now he's attacking a plan or a business operation was only raised for the first time in his reply brief. Second of all, it doesn't work because ICFA only gives a private right of action if an individual...
I wish you would actually use words that are normal in English. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Illinois Consumer.
The Illinois Consumer Fraud Act.
Just use English words.
I apologize. But that statute provides a private right of action only if an individual plaintiff has been damaged by a transaction. And therefore, for him to say, as an individual plaintiffs can sue a business operation, that's simply not what the statute applies. This court has held that Avery clearly has stated an out-of-state plaintiff only has the right to sue if the circumstances around a disputed transaction are primarily and substantially occurring in Illinois. So he has no case law to support this new argument. In fact, the only case he cites is an attorney general suit, and the attorney general suit is when it's on behalf of the state. And when the state is suing, it's an entirely different standard for standing than it is when an individual plaintiff. Avery doesn't apply when the attorney general is suing under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act.
I'm now totally lost. How could Illinois law either apply or not apply depending on who is suing?
Well, Avery, what I'm saying, Judge, is the holding...
If law simply doesn't apply, then who filed the lawsuit can't make any difference.
I'm not sure what you're asking. Avery...
My question is, how could Illinois law either apply or not apply depending on who's suing? You might say Illinois law applies all the time, but there's a private right of action only in limited circumstances. But I didn't understand that to be your argument.
I think what I was saying, Judge, is the Supreme Court ruling in Avery does not apply when the Attorney General is bringing the suit.
That's my question. How is it possible? How is it logically possible to say that Illinois law doesn't apply at all in a private suit?
Because Avery is addressing when non-Illinois residents are the ones that are the plaintiffs.
Whether Illinois law, I'm not going to argue with you. You obviously don't see the problem. All right, thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Monroy.
Yes. I hope to answer a couple of your questions. With respect to, while I haven't had the opportunity to survey the law of all 50 states with respect to pyramid statutes, I have had an opportunity to review the law for all of the plaintiffs that I represent, specifically in this lawsuit, Illinois, Missouri, Georgia, and Utah. And in each of these cases, the anti-pyramid scheme statutes were substantially similar. Now, the purpose of defendants moving to have these cases
schemes were defined the same way in each of those states' laws.
Yes, the language, not all the language was exactly the same, but the crux of each pyramid scheme was that the individuals primarily make their money from the inducement of others to join the plan or operation.
So that would fit all 50 states.
Yes, I believe so. Okay. Now there may be a couple quirks in that. However, those states in which Illinois law would be contrary to those states could be carved out in the class definition. Now, the sole purpose of defendants moving to dismiss the out-of-state, the non-Illinois resident plaintiff's Illinois Consumer Fraud Act claims was to avoid the possibility of class certification of a large class. So the fact that all of these statutes for all of the individual plaintiffs in their state is the same, they're simply trying to avoid a large certifiable class. Now, as far as the conflict of law, which law applies, I believe that it is the law in each state that the rules for conflict of laws in that state apply. In Illinois, the
Illinois Supreme Court said in Avery v. State Farm that Section 188 of the Restatement Second of Conflicts of Law applies, and they provided five factors. And in this case, the plaintiff's choice of law provision is appropriately applied to their claims because plaintiff's pleadings satisfy the majority of the provisions under Section 188. I'd like to quickly also draw this Court's attention to the District Court's decision that plaintiffs were not consumers under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act. This is significant for a number of different reasons. First of all, courts are required to construe the ICFA, the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, in accordance with the FTC. And every court that has construed the FTC with respect to work-from-home business plans has determined that the purchasers of those plans are consumers, not businesses.
Mr. Montroy, is it your position that do you agree that Avery requires that the disputed transactions primarily and substantially occur in Illinois?
Yes,
and you believe your allegations established that they primarily and substantially occur?
The allegations in plaintiff's complaint concern a business operation or plan. Unlike Avery, which concerned fraudulent transactions, and this concerns a business operation and plan. So, to the extent that, and that is what plaintiffs' allegations, that is the crux of the lawsuit, and that is what plaintiffs addressed in their complaint.
So you're making some fraud distinction in this case?
It's a different type of fraud. It isn't a fraud where I tell you a lie and I sell you a false product. It's a fraud in which the whole business operation is deceptive.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.